Coming to you live from Navarro, it's the Hand Plus Podcast, where each week, or every other week, we missed last week, we had some things going on. Tristan had a tree fall on his apartment, knocking out his internet, and then I had something I had to take care of this weekend, so we weren't able to just kind of do a wrap-up episode this weekend, so we essentially just skipped all of last week. But I digress, we're back, we're better than ever, hopefully, and we're here to talk about streaming, whether it's Hulu, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Disney Plus, Max, whatever the hell Max is, Paramount Plus, ESPN Plus. We've never talked about ESPN Plus, but maybe one day we will. And each week I am joined by my co-host, Tristan Mayer. Tristan's camera down this week, but he's still, if you're watching the video format, you only get my face. If you're listening to just the audio version, you'll really notice no difference. But Tristan, how was your last 2 weeks of streaming?
Yeah, I definitely had a busy couple of weeks. I did watch a good amount, and there was some big news too, so it's going to be kind of a news-heavy episode, I feel like, but there's a lot of a talk going on about streaming news this week. I can't wait to get into it. But yeah, Mando finale is going to be the big talk, I think, for us this week, because I know there's some passionate feelings about the show right now online. I've heard a lot of people having different opinions, so I can't wait to really talk to you, because even though it's been a while, we haven't talked much about how we feel overall about this season or this finale, so I can't wait to hear what you thought.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. That's how we're going to end out this show today. I know it's kind of a little bit old news, but, you know, it is what it is. It's definitely a show we want to talk about on here, so we will end with it. But we're going to do things a little bit differently. Normally, how we did this show is we'd start with HBO Max, and obviously we'd follow the acronym HBO Max, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Disney Plus. But we decided, you know what, let's shift things around, especially now that HBO Max isn't even HBO Max anymore. It's just Max. We decided we're just going to kind of change things around and do it so we always end with the biggest topic of the episode. So now we are kicking it off with Amazon, who supposedly there's talks now of them going from Prime Video to potentially changing their name to Amazon TV. I don't think that's the best move. I think the best move for them, to me, is just to change the name to Amazon Prime Video instead of just Prime Video. Do you have any thoughts on that as well, as far as a name change for Prime Video?
I think it's interesting. I know that they've had problems in the past of people being like, oh, I have Prime, but I don't have Prime Video. And you're like, you know, you say, oh, have you seen The Boys on Prime? They're like, oh, I don't have that. But yet they're ordering stuff at Amazon to their house every week because they do have Prime. They just don't even know that it's the same thing. So I wonder if this is a direction for them to kind of split that. You know, maybe they're going to have, you can pay for Prime shipping. It can also pay for Amazon TV. And maybe they're going to kind of split those two atoms and see how that goes. I'm curious how the future looks for that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I had a friend of the show, Jordan, asked me, like, hey, there's this show. I don't even remember what the show he wanted to watch on Amazon was, but he was like, yeah, I heard you talk about having Prime Video. Like, what can I use your sign in? And I was like, you have Amazon Prime. And basically, like you said, he didn't know that they were the same thing. So there's probably countless people out there who have the service, who want to watch the shows on there, but they think they have to pay more than what they're actually paying for. So I think it could be interesting if maybe they lower the price of Amazon Prime and then make Prime TV its own thing. Because for me, there isn't anything, if they separate it out, I'm just not going to get Amazon TV, because I haven't kept up with The Boys. There's really nothing on Amazon TV for me, to be honest.
Yeah, once in a while, Amazon drops something interesting. Their Dead Ringers remake came out this week. I'm curious to check that one out, a remake of a Cronenberg movie, Dead Ringers. But yeah, this Amazon is one of those things where they don't feel like they're dropping stuff every week. So, like Disney Plus, it feels like once in a while there's not something, but essentially every week there's something on Disney Plus that I kind of feel like I want to watch. And Amazon is like maybe once a month, if once every like 4 months, 5 months, they're dropping something I care about, you know?
Yep, I get that, yeah. And even like what was supposed to be this big, amazing release of Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power, I just watched a couple episodes and I was like, this isn't for me, and moved on, so.
Yeah, you and most of the people, it seems like.
Yep. And also some other big news coming from Amazon. Apparently, they're going to start using AI for a dialogue boosting feature. Essentially, if the AI picks up that the background noise is getting too loud or too quiet, they will adjust the speaking volume of the characters. And What are your thoughts on this?
I think it sounds like an okay thing, you know, because there are some times where it's like the audio mixing is so bad on some of these streaming shows that I really can't hear what they're saying, you know. So sometimes I do want to go in there and turn up the dialogue a little bit, but it definitely makes me wonder what the worst version of this looks like, you know, because it seems like you can go in there and be like, okay, I'm going to turn the music down to like 20%. I'm going to have the sound effects at like 80%, and I'm going to have the volume up all the way, you know, so I'm going to have max dialogue. But what does it sound like if you turn the music all the way down and the effects all the way down and you have like just the dialogue and someone's watching like an action movie and they're like, oh, it's too loud. I just wanted to hear what they were saying in the TV show. And then it's like you've ruined your TV show because all of a sudden you have no music, no sound effects, and you're just getting this weird AI boosted robot dialogue. I can't wait to see what it's like in action. I don't know if it's already like out there happening right now. I haven't even actually looked and tried it or anything, but I mean, yeah, it's a good feature. I'm probably going to use it theoretically for some stuff, yeah. But I do like to think about the worst case scenario of what you could do to use this to make your TV completely unwatchable, you know?
Like, my thing is, I hope they are mixed together in a way of like, okay, if something's too loud that it recognizes that you can't hear the dialogue, that it lowers both, or it lowers the background noise and increases the dialogue rather than increases the dialogue. Because I don't want a scene, like, I mean, there's scenes almost in like movies, like I think of a person we're going to be talking about on the next streaming service, Netflix, but David Fincher in The Social Network, where he intentionally made the club scene in The Social Network where like you could kind of only hear part of it. And that was his intention, because in an actual club, you can't really hear all of the dialogue, and the AI is not going to know that. So it's going to try to like mess with the audio so much that it's going to probably ruin things because the movie just wasn't meant to be that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my bigger questions is how does the AI, how good is the AI going to be? You know, like when you have stuff like that, or when you just have things like, oh, there's dialogue, but it's kind of quiet. Is the AI going to hear slightly quiet dialogue as background noise, and then suddenly you can't hear anything in a scene, you know? I'm really wondering how that's going to work. But and yeah, AI is taking over the world, Joe.
Yeah, and I also noticed, like, I don't know if you do, but my fiance and I, we watch TV with closed captions, and there's so many times where, like, some background character, like, says something as they're exiting the scene, and it's like, you can barely hear that someone is talking, but with the closed captions, it'll say, like, what they actually said was. I don't need the AI to blast that dialogue and, like, completely raise it, because whatever they were saying wasn't even important.
It was, yeah, like, I'm definitely sentence. Interested to see, and you think about how like someone like Christopher Nolan, who's such a perfectionist, is going to be like, oh no, this is going to ruin my sound mixing. All of a sudden you're going to go in there and be able to turn Tenet up so you can actually hear what they're saying and understand, you know, maybe the story a little bit. And he's going to be like, oh, that's not how I intended it to be. You know, there are going to be some purists out there who are like, oh, I don't want my stuff on Amazon Prime I don't want this feature on my movie or something like that.
Yeah. All right. You ready to move over to Netflix?
I'm ready. What do we got?
All right. First one, we got a rumor from Insider Jeff Snyder, who is saying that Netflix is courting David Fincher for an American remake of Squid Game. And I'll be honest, I didn't get on the Squid Game hype train. I've never seen it. If this came out, it wouldn't exactly draw me to watch it. I'd probably, even if it got great reviews, I'd probably sooner watch the original version, unless everyone was saying this is actually so much better than the original. But if it's on par or lesser than, I'd probably still just watch the original. So I don't really get the need for this, because it wasn't like, oh, this was big in like the Asian markets, but not really big in the American markets. Like Squid Game was massive in America. So I don't really know how great it would do. I feel like people would just be like, yeah, I've seen it and not check it out. But what are your thoughts on David Fincher doing an American Squid Game?
I saw a few episodes of Squid Game. I never ended up getting through it, but I definitely plan to. It was a really promising premise. You know, I like the idea of these people who have to compete, and obviously the obvious metaphor of like, oh, they're trying, you know, essentially it's capitalism or it's competing for resources or whatever you want to say. And I think what makes me excited about this is David Fincher. You know, I think any other, they just say, oh, Netflix is doing an American remake of Squid Game. I say that sounds terrible, but you say, oh, we're giving it to David Fincher, and I kind of get interested. Think about The Game. You know, David Fincher's The Game feels like something that is almost Squid Game like in its premise, where it's like this guy who is stuck in the middle of this huge elaborate game. Everybody is kind of in on it and playing this kind of big prank, and he's kind of trying to escape out of it as it gets going more and more and more, snowballing. And I really would think that feature could bring some tension out of it and some excitement to it. But my biggest question is, when they say a remake, do they mean they're just going to take the exact story and do it again? Or do they, is it kind of going to be more of a spinoff or more of like, oh, here's kind of the same thing, but in America? I think that would be more interesting rather than saying, okay, Fincher, do the exact story. Be like, okay, Fincher, take the premise of Squid Game and like do an American thriller version of that, you know?
Yeah, I think that would be more interesting if it was like a different story, but just the same concept.
And I think this also shows that Netflix is very confident in the killer, because they wouldn't be offering Fincher more work if they had a bomb out of them, you know?
Yeah, I think it's more just like, yeah, I mean, the killer, and I think they enjoy working with him, but it was just the series he did for him that everyone wants more of. They just
Mindhunter,
yeah. They just recognized, like, the cost of the show versus the amount of money it makes Netflix. It just didn't make sense, but I think they still recognize, like, that was a good show. It wasn't like, David Fincher made this bad show for us. It was just like, it just didn't work out financially.
Yeah, I think something that John Campia actually always said once on his podcast, not to shout out John Campia, but he used to say that it's not about necessarily making money, it's about making a good movie. And sometimes you're going to make a movie that doesn't necessarily get marketed well, it doesn't have the success, but if we know that you can make us a good movie or a good show, we'll put you in there again to try and make it. Because in the end, the director is kind of a selling point of a show, but there's so much more that goes into what makes a show successful that they're not going to really blame the director for it, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when it came out good and it just didn't end up hitting in the right way.
Yeah, I get that.
But yeah, I'm definitely interested more in this with Fincher attached, because if it wasn't him or if it was, you know, just random TV directors are going to be doing this, something like that, I would not be into it. But Fincher makes me interested.
Yeah, if they were like the Russo brothers are doing a remake of Squid Game, I'd be a little excited.
Yeah, speaking of AI.
Oh my God. AI can't even make hands right. They're not even close to making a movie, man. Anyways, so Netflix had some highs and some lows in the last couple weeks. Love is Blind had a live finale. And Tristan, I know you. This probably didn't enter your sphere at all, but for the reality TV show fans, this was super heavily promoted. Like, there was so much going on with social media of... is basically, if you didn't watch the show, it's people who meet, don't get to see each other, they get engaged, and then after they get engaged, they finally get to see each other face-to-face, and then they go kind of on like a mini honeymoon with all the other couples on the show, and eventually, basically, the end of the story is them getting married, and now it's been almost a year of these people being married, and we've found stuff out through social media and people doing their own little online investigations. And people had all these questions, and people had people they liked and people they hated. And this whole thing of, like, everything was going to come out in the live finale. Live finale is going to be a week ago, so basically almost a week and a half ago Sunday, live 8 o'clock Eastern. 8 o'clock Eastern rolls around, and no, everyone clicks on the show to watch it live, and it just says, like, your thing cannot be played right now. And then around 8:15, people keep trying to play it and play it and play it, and it just, like, wouldn't allow to be played. Around 8:15, or no, it was, like, around 8:05, it would say, oh, the live finale is now going to be at 8:15. And everyone's like, oh, okay, whatever, you know, technical difficulties. And then it becomes 8:30 and no live finale, and 8:45 and no live finale, and 8:50. And, like, the people participating in the live finale are posting on Instagram, like, yeah, we're just waiting for Netflix to get this thing going and get everything running. It eventually took them a little over an hour, about an hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes for them to get it going and start the live finale. And then the live finale happened and it was kind of a dud. Fans of the show were like, you very much overpromised and underdelivered, and the whole thing was just a complete mess. But it was entertaining nonetheless because of its messiness. So I'm curious to see how live finales for other shows work moving forward, or live shows work moving forward. I know they did the Chris Rock comedy special live, and they've had like live weekly shows that I don't think have panned out very well. So I don't know. And like the Chris Rock live special came and went. No one really talked about it. So I don't know if Netflix is really in the business of doing live shows, or if they should be in the future. But Tristan, I've rambled for a while. What are your thoughts in general, I guess, of Netflix doing live stuff because none of them have really seemed to pan out.
Yeah, you said that this live finale did not really enter my sphere, and that's true. I didn't know it was happening, but what I did know was that it was going badly. You know, as soon as it started to not work, I was hearing about it, and I feel like that's not good for Netflix, that all I hear about is how it didn't go well. And when they're on the verge of this new technology of live streaming and all the platforms are trying to figure it out, it's definitely embarrassing for Netflix to falter on this thing they hyped up so much of watch this live, watch it happen, and then it ends up happening, it's not even live, right? When you end up watching it, it was on demand, essentially. It was a replay of it already, you know, it wasn't really live. And that kind of defeats the whole purpose of it being a live event, you know? So I hope Netflix doesn't give up on this. I just hope that they're able to find something creative to do with it, you know? And I'm wondering if we're going to talk about Black Mirror in a second, spoiler alert, but I feel like Black Mirror is an IP that they could do something really interesting and fascinating and creative with live streaming in that way, but we'll see if they do something like that. But yeah, as of right now, Netflix has been doing okay. You know, nothing has been bombing before this, but nothing has been really hitting. Nothing's like a must watch, you know, so I feel like someone's got to have a must watch.
Yeah, I feel like we can kind of branch over to talking about the Netflix. I'll save a little bit, you know, we can talk about the teaser itself, but I think almost if they were to say, hey, the first episode of season 6 of Black Mirror is going to be live, say 5 Eastern on a Sunday. So basically pretty much everyone should be home. 5 Eastern on a Sunday is going to be at most the contiguous United States is going to be 2 o'clock, and then it'll be 10 PM, in London, essentially. So for the English-speaking audience, they'll be awake, they'll be home. And if they were to say, hey, the whole... and they could have it earlier, whatever. But the first episode is going to be a live episode. It's going to be filmed live. We've written it for it to be live. Our cast has been rehearsing. They can post like small clips of them rehearsing the episode. And then following the end of the live episode, the rest of the season will drop. And I think that would get people hyped, that would get people excited, but they should have their servers ready, because I think that was the problem with the whole Love is Blind, is they did not have their servers ready for that many people to be watching a live broadcast.
Yeah, I feel like streamers ran into that a few times, where it's like, oh, we're dropping the first episode of Obi-Wan Kenobi, and then Disney Plus crashes. It's like, oh, did you not realize people were going to be waiting to watch it? You know, where we dropped the first episode of House of the Dragon and HBO crashes, and then it's like, oh, I guess you didn't know that people would be watching the finale of Game of Thrones, you know, you weren't ready for that.
That's why a lot of people think that Disney Plus drops their shows in the middle of the night, so it staggers when people watch, so there's not a mad rush of everyone watching it at the same time.
Yeah, I'm curious if that continues, because I do not want to be staying up to 3 in the morning to watch stuff, you know? It makes me not want to watch stuff when it drops.
I'm fine with my schedule at this point of just setting my alarm at 3 o'clock, waking up, but it does suck when I go to watch the next episode and I kind of have forgotten what I watched. but yeah, we talked about Love is Blind being a disaster. Netflix CEO has says not to expect any more Netflix movies in theaters, which I'm curious how his relationships with certain filmmakers is going to go. Like, can't imagine Martin Scorsese is going to sign up to do a Netflix movie anytime soon if that's the case.
Yeah, and I wonder how Rian Johnson feels, because he really pushed Netflix to get that theater release for Knives Out 2, and it was a success. They made a good amount of money off of it, and a lot of the buzz and the good reviews came from those theater screenings, but all of a sudden, it's going to feel weird that he's going to like tap off his Knives Out trilogy, and it's going to just be sitting there watching it, streaming at home. It's going to kind of not feel the same. I wonder if they'll make an exception for one or two movies here and there or something, but it sounds like they have no plans to be hyping up the theaters. Meanwhile, places like Apple and Amazon are all, you know, having theater releases here and there, whether they're wide or limited. They're doing theater releases for their movies, and I feel like they're managing to do both really well, whereas Netflix is trying so hard to rely on that user number, getting that subscription every single month over and over and over, as many as they possibly can. And I feel like you're throwing money away. Like, how do you not do a release for something like Knives Out 3 and rake in that money for a couple of weeks, and then it does nothing but build up hype when it finally does drop on streaming, right?
Yeah, I think the move for me is that 45-day window. Like, obviously, for the bigger movies, I wouldn't do that. Like, I'm not putting Mission Impossible 6 or Mission Impossible 7 on Paramount Plus 45 days after it starts in theaters. But for a smaller movie like a Knives Out or something like that, I think that 45-day window is perfect. Because that's right around the time people... Like, you're not going to be seeing packed theaters for Knives Out after 45 days.
And I don't think you release every single Netflix movie in theaters, but I feel like when you have a filmmaker like David Fincher or Rian Johnson or Martin Scorsese, you want to release them in theaters. Those are going to make money, you know, and those are going to feel like events, and those screenings are going to do nothing but build up buzz and build up hype if your movie is good for when it drops on streaming. You know, when The Killer comes out from Fincher, I'm going to hope that they have a streaming or a theater release for it somewhere, but they probably won't, and it's going to feel weird to just sit here at home watching something shot as well as a Fincher movie, something that I'm going to feel like I want to be in the theater for, really, really engaged with. And, you know, that's money that Netflix could be taking from me, even though I'm already paying for the subscription. I'm essentially paying for a whole nother subscription worth just to see the one movie, you know? I don't know why they're not just taking the money.
Yeah, I get that. Some other Netflix sad news. They're losing a service I didn't know still existed. They're no longer mailing people DVDs. I didn't even know they still did that. So if you were consuming Netflix in that way, I ask why. I mean, I guess maybe if you have garbage internet, but I assume if you live in an area with garbage internet, you probably have a Family Video because those are weirdly still around.
I will tell you, Joe, until about a year ago, I was a loyal subscriber to Netflix DVD. On top of my streaming subscription, I was also paying for the DVD. And the reason I did was honestly just because the selection was just so good. And essentially, anything that's been released on DVD has been available. You don't have to worry about, like, oh, is it on Netflix? Is it on this? And there was so much stuff that I wanted to watch, especially during the shutdown and the pandemic, especially, where I was like, okay, this is not really streaming, so I'm just going to sign up for Netflix DVD again. And I couldn't believe it either. I was like, oh, I didn't know this was still existing. But I signed up again, and I was getting my movies in the mail, and I was binging through a bunch of stuff, and it brought back a lot of memories because I did sign up for this back in the day, and it was my first interaction with Netflix, was getting those TV shows in the mail and getting those movies in the mail and binging through them and having to send them back and wait and wait and wait for the next one. And then eventually logging onto the site and being like, hey, what the hell, I can just watch something on here. Like, it was just like a spontaneous discovery where I was going on to the Netflix site to order whatever my next movie was going to be, and all of a sudden I could hit play on Dexter and watch it, and I was like, you can just watch it on here, you know? And all of a sudden it's, you know, how you watch most of your content now.
All right, and we also have Big Mouth is getting its 8th and final season. Big Mouth was a show I watched like its first couple seasons and I enjoyed, but it started to get repetitive, so I kind of dipped after probably season 3. But Tristan, did you watch Big Mouth at all? And are you as shocked as I was to see it's been on for 7, coming on 8 seasons?
Yeah, I had the same experience as you. I really enjoyed the first season and I was kind of into it as it was going along, but it definitely felt like I was getting the same joke and the same tone at me one too many times, you know, and I just kind of checked out from the show. But 8 seasons is a long run, so I don't feel like anyone can be disappointed by that. And hopefully they do a satisfying end, because I did like the characters the first few seasons I watched. So it'll be nice to know that it gets a good finale for people who are still watching it. 8 seasons, people must be watching it, you know. That's, I think, the Netflix's longest running show of all time now.
Yeah, I was about to ask, because another Netflix show had anywhere close to 8 seasons.
I think I did see in the headline that this is Netflix's longest running original show. So 8 seasons is a great run for them. And I honestly don't see many shows catching up. I guess animated shows are easier to get long run, you know, but something like Stranger Things is not going to hit 8 seasons, you know?
Yeah. All right. And as far as the first thing we actually watched, I watched the documentary on Netflix, Is That Black Enough For You? My fiance put it on. I didn't really know what it was. And essentially it was just talking about like black history and media. It's actually surprisingly very timely now because Harry Belafonte was a big part of the documentary. They talked about him and interviewed him. And he unfortunately passed away a couple days ago at 96 years old. But just so many things like you don't think about or you didn't know about. Like, I can't remember who it was, but someone on the documentary was talking and they were like visiting their grandparents. And they were flipping through the channels and they decided to put it on the Andy Griffith Show. And his grandma was like, don't watch that show. I don't like that show. And he was like, why? He's like, because that show is in a small rural southern town and it's all white people. And he's like, what do you think happened to the black people in that town? And she's like, that's why I don't like watching it. And then just certain things of like Saturday Night Fever's opening with John Travolta is just clearly a ripoff of Shaft. And I've seen Shaft a couple times. I've seen Saturday Night Fever once or twice, but I never realized that they were, that it was just a complete ripoff of the opening of Shaft until they played them side by side. And you're like, oh yeah, it is very much clearly, they like ripped off the same color as the opening credits. The font's pretty much the same. The shots are nearly identical. But I definitely think it's worth checking out.
Yeah, I have not watched this, but I'll definitely add it to the watch. It sounds interesting, and I like documentaries, especially about like media history and like the culture and the way that, you know, culture and civil rights interact with media in a lot of ways. People like to think that media and TV and movies are just this nice little thing that exists outside of the real world, but, you know, politics and the real world interact directly with art, and art is like a reflection of real life and politics, you know, so it's always been there. We just haven't necessarily always seen it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically kind of like the history of like Black people in media and kind of the changes that media has made and how people have changed through media. And I just think it was very interesting to watch. And Tristan, there was a movie you watched, I believe, that was the number one movie on Netflix this week. Not a Netflix original. And I'm surprised it even cracked the top 10. I've not watched this movie, but I've heard enough about it to be shocked that it was number one. And I would like you to tell everyone about your experience watching The Snowman.
Yeah, I watched The Snowman. I was shocked to see it number one, not just for a week, but it was there for a little while, you know, so it was there so long that I started to convince myself maybe people are like reevaluating this movie, because if you don't remember, this stars Michael Fassbender as a detective, and he investigates a missing person case in kind of a small town murder case where just the only evidence is a snowman left at the scene with a little red scarf around it. And it came out to a whopping 6% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a very, very low score. And it was, you know, mocked when it came out for being very terrible and boring and slow, but all of a sudden it pops up on Netflix as the number one movie. So I give it a watch. And Joe, before I start, I want to give you a guess on what the main character's name is in this movie.
Joe.
We are dealing with Detective Harry Hole.
That's I feel like I've heard that before. And also, yeah, just for anyone who doesn't know, they ran out of money to make the movie while making the movie. So the movie wasn't exactly finished when they released it.
And let me tell you, you can tell, because, and I understand why this was maybe number one movie on Netflix after I watched it, because the first like 20, 25 minutes of this are actually pretty compelling and interesting. It's a, you know, this slow build murder, and you kind of do see this intense scene at the beginning of a woman dying, and this eerie imagery, and it kind of has this overcasted gray and white kind of look to it, where it all feels really snowy and cold and dark, and you kind of get this small town murder vibe of it that kind of pulls you in for at least long enough to register a watch on Netflix, you know. And I feel like it's long enough to at least leave it on and start texting, you know. And that's probably why it starts getting up to the number one, because it's good enough to start watching, you know. And when you say that it ran out of money through production, I feel like that makes sense, because when you get to the last half of this and it starts to kind of like bring the plot together, you start to realize that it doesn't make any sense really. And it's just, I spent a lot of people talking in rooms about stuff and a lot of new characters showing up out of nowhere, and you're sitting there like, man, who is this again? I don't even know who you are or what you're talking about right now. And it goes from a really compelling small scale mystery to just this very boring twisty turny story that doesn't end up making a lot of sense by the end. And I was very let down by this, and especially because I was watching it at first and I was like, oh my god, it actually is going to be good, you know, because the first 20 minutes or so are actually good, and I was like, wow, that the critics are wrong, this is actually gonna be great. I can't wait to go on the podcast and talk about how awesome this movie was, because I love going on here and praising stuff that got bad reviews, but this was not one of those times.
Yeah, that's kind of what I heard too, is a lot of people like went in with a similar mindset, like they've heard it sucks, they go in, they're like, this ain't bad, and then about 45 minutes in they're like, no, this sucks and it's really bad. And so I'm glad you had a similar experience. I feel bad for the director, but also it's partially on him and the producers for managing their money better, so they don't get 80% of the way through filming and realize, oh, we have no more money.
And you look at Michael Fassbender's career and you wonder where it's going here. You know, he was the top of the world for half a second. He was the new Magneto. People were loving him and saying he was great. And, you know, one of the next big hit actors. And now all of a sudden he's, what has he been in recently? You know, The Killer coming out is maybe going to be his comeback role. You know,
we had a trailer
before that. What has he been doing?
He had a movie that was, he was the recast, but he had a trailer for another movie come out today. I don't know if you saw that, but.
What trailer?
Give next me a
trailer.
Fool wins. He's the star of Taika Waititi's next movie. That trailer came out today. But that's
I did not watch that.
But that's not streaming. I don't want to talk about it too much. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see on that one. I'll say. It's hard to judge.
Yeah, I would not recommend The Snowman. Of the plenty of bad movies that are good, this is not one of them.
Yeah. Just quick thoughts. It's not a streaming movie, so I won't. But I did bring it up, but my general thoughts on Next Goal Wins is it looks kind of like Taika Waititi merged with Wes Anderson, and I don't know how to feel about that. I could watch the movie and love it, but just based on the trailer, I was like, I don't know how to feel on this.
I have liked but not loved Taika Waititi's movie so far, so I'm curious. Maybe a slight tonal change will be something I really like.
All right, you ready to hop over to HBO Max, or Max, as I should say?
Yeah, and we got 2 weeks left of HBO Max. I kind of want to say HBO Max. Give it the full name treatment while we still can, Joe, because we got two more
weeks. Home Box Office Max.
His name was HBO Max.
His name was HBO Max. All right, so we got Madeline Stowe joining Welcome to Derry. You know, she was kind of a bigger name back in the day, and now, I guess, staging a little bit of a comeback. Interesting to see what her character is going to be, especially because the cast so far has been a predominantly black cast, so I wonder if she's going to be, like, potentially maybe, like, a racist character based on the idea and the premise of everything we know about Derry in the past, obviously being a It spinoff, or maybe she'll be a sympathetic character, main character, an ally, who knows. But what are your general thoughts on Madeline Stowe joining Welcome to Derry?
I'm excited for it. The show just keeps getting better and better, and I'm loving this cast as it grows, you know, because something like this could be anything. It could just end up being like a dud to streaming prequel that ended up not really mattering, but when you add a good cast to it, it makes you get really confident and start feeling like, oh man, people are saying yes to this. You know, people are reading this script and signing on. People who have, like, careers, you know, so I'm excited to see how this goes, and yeah, I'm getting more and more hype for the show.
All right, and Variety is reporting that Charlie Sheen and Chuck Lorre are reuniting on the Sebastian Maniscalco-led series How to Be a Bookie. Sebastian Maniscalco, if you don't know, is a pretty popular comedian right now, probably one of the top selling famous comedians. But I was shocked when I read that. I figured Chuck Lorre and Charlie Sheen would never work together again after their big fallout on 2.5 Men. Any thoughts on this show? This cast, or Chuck Lorre and Charlie Sheen working together again?
I'm definitely shocked that they're working together again, especially when the finale of 2.5 Men is essentially just this giant personal middle finger to Charlie Sheen saying, I'm better than you. So, you know, it's like they really had to mend fences, and I wonder how big the Brinks truck was that went to their houses to make that happen, or I wonder if this was just a great, compelling opportunity to come back to comedy and come together. But in the end, I'm not a Chuck Lorre or a Charlie Sheen fan. There's nothing that Chuck Lorre's produced that I've thought was anything other than watchable, you know? So this is not something that I'm going to be diving into anytime soon. You know, if people watch this and say it's great and it's, you know, one of the best things they've done together, I might check it out. But I don't necessarily feel like it's going to be something that's on the top of my watch list right now, because it just is not the type of comedy that I watch. And Charlie Sheen, you know, beyond washed up at this point, you know, what are you doing, Charlie Sheen?
But yeah, if you don't know, if you haven't seen the news, the show follows a veteran bookie struggling to survive the impending legalization of sports gambling, his increasingly unstable clients, and his family and coworkers. So,
Charlie Sheen's Uncut Gems.
Yeah, can't wait. Can't wait to not watch it. That's honestly where I'm at.
Like, if you gave me Charlie Sheen's Uncut Gems, I'd watch that.
Yeah. What if they announced the Safdie brothers' next movie stars Charlie Sheen?
I'd be interested. You know, we'll see what the Safdie brothers are doing in the future, Hollywood. We'll see if they have any work left in them.
Yeah. All right. We also have some good news from HBO Max. They got 5.6 million new subs from between January and March. So they're definitely growing, even if they have this dumb name change.
Yeah, even though the service is in chaos and it sounds like they have no idea what's going on behind the scenes, they're still getting the subs and they're still making good content. You know, Succession and Barry and all these big shows are dropping on HBO right now. So it's you can't say it's not doing well. Winning, if you would.
Yeah, winning. Like, my thing, too, is, like, pound for pound is HBO Max. Like, if you just stack the original content next to each other, does HBO Max have the best original content?
It's got to be, you know, because Netflix will have its highs, like, Stranger Things that are, like, big pop culture highs, but you can't tell me Stranger Things is as good as, like, you know, Succession or Barry, honestly, to me, you know? Mm. I think Netflix does a good job acquiring other stuff. Like, it has Better Call Saul on there, but in terms of originals, Netflix is very much quantity over quality. It just super soaks you with original shows and original movies and eventually hopes that one of them hits, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas HBO feels like it's very selective. It feels like HBO Sunday night is always going to be something that's worth watching, even if it's out of your genre comfort zone. Like, Succession is not something I would watch, but having that Sunday night drop on HBO Max is almost like a prestigious spot still. You know, it's like it has this legacy of Game of Thrones and Sopranos and The Wire and all of these great shows, and it still kind of means something. It still feels like they're always dropping good stuff on their platform that's well shot, well written, that's like artists forward and creative. I really am happy with what they're making.
All right, and then a little bit of news tying somewhat to the next Netflix news. David Zaslav, I don't know how to say his name, David Zaslav, head of the Warner Brothers whole entity over there, says that Warner Brothers does not believe in direct-to-streaming movies, which honestly makes no sense to me. Like, especially when the whole superhero thing going on right now. Like, I know they moved Blue Beetle from theater or from HBO Max to theaters, but certain things, I think, like, if they wanted to build out Matt Reeves' universe, which with the whole new DCU thing going on, even DCU, like, if they were to say, hey, we're making the Question movie direct to HBO Max, like, I'd be down to watch it. I don't think that needs or warrants a whole theatrical release, maybe a limited theatrical run, but definitely not a wide theatrical run. Like, I don't think everything necessarily needs to be a big theatrical movie, nor does a story need to be stretched out for a whole series. Like, I feel like there's a middle ground. I think people would have liked certain Disney Plus Star Wars shows if they were a direct-to-Disney Plus movie rather than a series.
Yeah, I wonder, because this seems to tie into a lot of things that are going on with HBO Max as they kind of find their identity, you know, because this feels like more of a statement from Warner Brothers than HBO in a way, because I feel like David Zaslav wants to sell the idea that Warner Brothers is a cinematic studio that makes movies for the cinema, big-scale cinematic movies that are not like smaller, small budget type of things. They make event movies, something like Barbie that you want to go and see day one and talk about it with your friends and be there with the crowd. And I also go back and think about Batgirl. Maybe he cancels Batgirl because it's just not to the quality of something you would release in the theater, you know? And I wonder if his idea of Warner Brothers is we make stuff for the movie theater and HBO Max or HBO is what makes stuff for TV, you know? And I wonder if he wants to kind of separate those two things, and that ties into the rebranding too of Max. Maybe they're trying to figure out the identity and make sure that Warner Brothers and HBO are separate entities that people look at as two different things and make different types of content. Because if you start merging them too much, I don't think it works. And I think it's interesting too, this is essentially the opposite of what Netflix said. Like, Netflix is saying, oh, we're only doing streaming movies, and HBO is saying, no, that doesn't seem to work for us. We're not going to do that, you know? So we'll see who wins. Yeah. And for me, I feel like we're seeing more success on Warner Brothers' part because they can release stuff and it'll make a good amount of money. And then a few months later, oh, look, there it is on HBO Max. And I wonder, you know, what the balance is like now.
Yeah. And that even kind of ties into Warner Brothers Animation selling like DC animated stuff to Amazon rather than just putting it straight to HBO Max.
Yeah, it seems like they're trying to unify the brand a little bit and say, okay, stuff on HBO Max is stuff that we want to be like directly associated with part of our DC world and part of our universe or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And what's interesting is they're kind of trying to dig themselves out of a hole. What is Warner Brothers Discovery and HBO going to look like a year from now? It definitely looks different now than I thought it would. We're finally getting that rebrand in a couple of weeks that we were talking about how long ago, you know? So we'll
ever see how it goes. Notice that first trailer of that Elizabeth Olsen show, when I look and I see it just says a Max original instead of an HBO Max, and I'm like, that's interesting. But also to round out HBO Max or the home box office Max, you wanted to talk about Barry's final season.
Yeah, we're going nearing the end, honestly, the final season, I think, at least the later half of the middle here. And I wanted to kind of check in and talk a lot about how I'm really into this tonal shift that it's going for, because the first season, of course, is very much on the comedic side. It was, you know, wouldn't it be funny if Bill Hader was going to acting school and also a murderer, too? And what would the two worlds clashing look like? Wouldn't that be kind of funny and also dark? And as it's gone along, it's definitely gone more and more into the dark. And now it is just like this very, very brutal and tough to get through show that is funny at parts, but much more on the dramatic side. And I've been so impressed by Bill Hader, not just from his performance, which is great. You know, he's kind of just giving this, you know, Bryan Cranston and Better Call Saul level performance that I feel like really should be up on like the pedestal of great all-time TV turns, you know, from comedy to drama especially. But as a director too, he's directing every episode this season, and wow, like what an impressive debut as a director. And he's talked about how he wants to do a horror movie next, and I hope he does that, because he has this great eye for just terror and tension and I don't know, just the surreal darkness of this character, who is a man who had any chance to change and just wasn't changing, and all the people that he hurt along the way, all the people that he broke, and people who were there for him and tried to help him, and that he didn't let help him. And now it's kind of him reaping the consequences of everything he's done, and I can't wait to see how it ends. We got, I think, what, 3 or 4 episodes, if that, to see how it wraps up, and I can't wait.
Yeah. It's a show I've never watched. It looks interesting to me. It appeals to me. I just, for whatever reason, have never clicked play on it. So HBO Max, figure that out. Figure out what you need to do to make me click play.
Look, and now that it's almost over, maybe if the finale is great and I come on here and I'm like, Joe, it wraps up so well, it'll inspire you to watch it. Because I think it's a good time to go like 4 seasons in and out. This is a show that would not be one to drag along, especially at the point the plot is at now. I don't see how you get past this point in the plot. You know, they're at the end of the story here. But yeah, I can't wait to see how they wrap it up and how this tonal shift works out. But I'm also just so excited to see what Bill Hader's future is as a director and an actor, because this dramatic turn is just incredible, and one that I think people should be talking about more, and one that I hope people will remember in the future and come back and revisit and talk about as one of those all-time great acting turns.
Yep. All right, yeah, I'll definitely have to check it out one day. Maybe by like 2045 I'll watch an episode.
We'll see.
All right, moving over to Freevee. Before we end on Amazon Prime, I believe.
Probably Disney Plus.
Yeah, or Disney Plus, whatever. I finished Jury Duty.
Great show.
Is great from beginning to end. If you're like, I need a show to watch, I need just funny, lighthearted show, check out Jury Duty. I talked about it last episode, but this basically ends amazingly. I'm going to create an award. If we didn't already have this award last year for best season finale or best series finale, whatever, I'm going to create that award for the next Handies just so I can give it to Jury Duty. I thought it ended so well. Perfect show. I don't know if they do a season 2, if it's possible. The show hasn't got like popular enough or mainstream enough that if they haven't recorded a season 2, I feel like they still could and no one would really catch on. I just thought it was great. Definitely check out Jury Duty if you haven't. It's on Freevee, which is Amazon Prime's free thing, so you just got to download it. You don't have to pay anymore. There are going to be commercials, but it's not going to cost you any money. It's so good. Check it out.
Yeah, I watched this on your recommendation, and I loved it. It was so funny, and it was just like you said, an easy watch. It's kind of almost like heartfelt reality show that you're laughing with everybody, and you're kind of having a good time watching it. And they're really creative with the setup. So I love that James Marsden plays such a – you think it's like a cameo for the first episode, you know, where you're like, oh, James Marsden is going to show up for the first episode. That's funny, you know, and then he's just there, like, throughout. And the way he plays out the relationship is just very funny. And, yeah, I hope they do more of it. I'm curious, like you said, at what point people catch on. You know, how many of these can you record before somebody's like, you know what, I think this is the Jury Duty show. You know, I've seen 7 seasons of this on Freevee. But I hope they can do more of it. And I wonder if they'll have to change it up or something like that, go to totally different locations and things like that so that they don't have to, nobody catches on, or maybe some other like part of the judicial system they'll record. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I'm hoping they make more because this was such a great show. And I have been seeing people tweeting about it more than any other Freevee show I've ever heard of. You know, so I wonder
if there is name another Freevee show if you forced me to. If gone to my head, name a show on Freevee, like a Freevee original that isn't Jury Duty. I physically could not. I don't know one.
I don't think I could either. If I dug in there, I could probably find something in there, but I couldn't pull one for you.
Yeah, definitely check it out. I loved it. And to go over some of these other smaller services, Tristan, did you watch Pink Ladies on Paramount Plus?
I did. This is a prequel to Grease. It takes place 4 years before Grease, so it's essentially like a whole high school class earlier than Grease, you know. So you kind of get the origin story of the Pink Ladies, you know, in the early 50s, where it's kind of very strict of what women can be and women can wear, women can do. It follows these women in high school who decide to kind of push against the norms and break the rules of who they are supposed to be and kind of, you know, be more confident and independent. And eventually they become informed the Pink Ladies that you know from the movie Grease. And there are these big musical numbers and big dance numbers and very stylish sequences that I really enjoyed. I think visually this is a really compelling show. It really captures the nostalgia goggles of Grease, because Grease, you know, captures the 50s in that really nostalgic, glowing kind of way. And this does it in that same glowing kind of way. But unfortunately, I think what makes this show fall is that the music is just not anything special. It's very anachronistic, I think you'd say, because it sounds sort of like music that came out today in a lot of ways, at least mm-hmm. production-wise. You know, like the beats and things like that are very modern, and that pulls me out of something that is so set in the 50s. And if they did more of like the traditional musical kind of songs, I think this would have worked a lot better. And unfortunately it doesn't really work for me as a whole. I'm gonna finish it out because there's still a couple episodes left, but yeah, I'm a bit disappointed on this because I was going in wanting it to be, you know, a big singing musical, a lot like the original movie, and I think that would have made this work a lot better, because as of right now the music is not good enough to warrant being so out of place, you know.
Yeah, I understand that. All right, you ready to move over to Disney Plus?
Let's go. Here's the big one.
All right. We'll kick off a little bit of small topics first. First off, National Treasure canceled after one season. Didn't see a single person talk about it. The draw of National Treasure with Nicolas Cage. Without Nicolas Cage, nobody cares.
Yeah, that's a lesson. Make a National Treasure 3, or at least bring Nick Cage back. But I feel like Nick Cage would not lower himself to television at this point in his career. So I feel like he said no to the show, and he would say no to any streaming show. So give him a National Treasure 3 and people will maybe go see it.
I don't think you would say no to a streaming show unless it was like a Nick Cage like starring show, and it was like I think if the movie he just did with Pedro Pascal, if that was like a series on Amazon or like HBO Max, I think he would have still done that. I just don't know if he's gonna lower himself to cameo in a National Treasure series.
That's true. It wouldn't just be here's Nick Cage for a second, I don't think.
No. Also, we have Visions coming soon. That's coming May 4th, I believe. So, yeah, they've dropped some teasers. They dropped some posters. We have the teaser. I'm super excited about it. I think it's going to be a lot like season one. There's going to be 3 shorts I love. Three shorts that are just okay, and I'll go back and rewatch them once or twice, and then three I'm gonna be like, these are garbage, I'm never gonna watch them again. I can tell you right now, one of those in the last category is gonna be from the Wallace and Gromit studio, because I've seen two or three Wallace and Gromit movies and I thought they all sucked. So Tristan, what are your thoughts on Visions coming out, I believe, in a week? Let me look. May 4th. So yeah, a week from tomorrow. It'll be Thursday. Next week.
I'm really excited for it. I loved the first season of Visions. I thought it was great to see the Star Wars world from such different angles and styles. And I liked that every episode was so visually distinct from itself. And from what I've seen from the trailer and from the reviews, because critics have gotten these earlier, there's not reviews out, but there's like reactions. So you can go on social media and see what people thought a little bit about Visions so far. And I think this is going to be exactly like that. I think every episode is going to be very distinct, especially because they went beyond Japan and reached out to all these other studios. And, you know, the Wallace and Gromit studio is going to look exactly like a Wallace and Gromit movie, but everything seems to look very different and cool. And I can't wait to watch it. And the reactions have all been pretty positive so far. So, yeah, I'm excited for this. I can't wait to watch it. It's one of my, if this delivers, especially, this is going to become one of my favorite Star Wars series, because if not my favorite, because this is just such a fun way to look at the world. And it's not furthering the story, but it honestly does kind of feel like it's furthering the lore in its own way. You know, it's giving different perspectives on like what the lore of Star Wars could be or something like that. So I feel like it furthers my perspective on Star Wars, even if it doesn't like expand the plot at all.
And I do hope in a way it can expand the plot. Like, I'd love, like, moving forward, like, obviously you're only two or three years removed, but moving forward, they treat these Vision stories almost like the way they treat the Legend stuff from like the 80s and 90s now, where it's like, oh, that's a cool character, we can kind of bring them, mold them and bring them into canon, or like, that's a cool storyline, we can kind of mold that and reshape it and bring it into canon. And it can kind of, you can kind of almost watch this story happen in real time of like, oh, this, you know, Japanese studio created this storyline, created this really cool character that everyone had a positive reaction to and loved, and now freaking like Simu Liu is playing this character that he voiced in the Visions version. Now he's playing the character in live action in this movie or this TV show.
Yeah, I definitely am curious what the future of it looks like, because it's just kind of these offshoot stories, at least the first season was. You know, I don't even necessarily know, maybe the second season does cross over with a character here and there. We do get something like, oh, here's Luke out doing some temple thing or whatever, and that kind of could be canon-ish, but it's like a different version of a story.
Yeah, I think Boba Fett was the only, it was like Boba Fett and someone else in that same teaser was the only like existing Star Wars character, everything else. And I think there's an existing Star Wars character in one of the shorts, but I don't remember who it was. But it's, again, going to be like a background character. It's not going to be like, oh, this is an adventure of Han Solo. It's going to be like, this is an adventure of a character that had like four lines, probably.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it. And yeah, I hope that the future of the season is, of this series is great, because I just hope they keep making them, because there's so many different studios that could come in, especially if this gets bigger and bigger. Like, who are the anime, even like an independent animator, like imagine like they do another Miyazaki, but it's a short and not just a little like screensaver that they made together. An actual,
that was garbage.
You know, actual Visions episode, something like that.
Yeah.
Or Guillermo del Toro comes in and does like a stop motion Star Wars short for the next series of Visions. That could be great, you know?
Yeah. What are your thoughts on, so the next Star Wars celebration is in Japan. What are your thoughts if they announce, not necessarily like Miyazaki or Studio Ghibli, but what are your thoughts if they announce like coming, let's see, it's 2025. So what if they say like coming 2029 is an animated, theatrically released, like canon Star Wars movie from like one of the studios that made a Vision short?
I would love it, you know, because I think animation, Star Wars lives in the animated world for me. Like, I love the movies, but the highest points of the Star Wars story for me are in the animated shows. So you bring that to the big screen, you give them a great, huge animated budget. The Clone Wars and Rebels and Bad Batch shows already look really, really good at this point. You know, the latest seasons of Bad Batch and the last season of Clone Wars look just fantastic. And you give them a theatrical budget and put it up on the big screen and tell a story that's like big and worth telling. I would love to see that, because the scale of Star Wars and animation is just so cool. And the see that on the big screen, especially something that they would put the money behind and the names behind, and make up for the fact that the last time they put a Star Wars animated movie in the big screen, it was not very well received or good. No. So give us a good one this time, and I'd be there for it.
All right. Ready to talk about our big topic, our main topic? It's going to be probably a little bit longer of an episode, considering we're at 55 minutes now, and we like to keep it around an hour. But, you know, we had 2 weeks worth of news to catch up on, so.
Yeah, we got a big one, I guess.
All right, but it may help, because I haven't seen this episode in over a week now, so. But Tristan, we got to the Mandalorian season 3 finale. A lot of reactions, a lot of people were just kind of like, it was fine. And honestly, that's kind of where I was. I think the other two finales of season 1 and 2 were far superior to this one. If you haven't watched it, haven't quite caught up, essentially the episode starts, Din's been captured, and then Din breaks free. And the whole episode, for the most part, takes place on this Imperial base on Mandalore, and Din escapes and everything's good, and you know, they go back, they restart the forge, and everything's fine. And it felt like we got a lot of endings to stuff that was never really we got like payoffs for stuff that were never really set up. But Tristan, what were your kind of general thoughts on the Mandalorian season 3 finale?
Yeah, just for the finale itself, I had a decent time with it. You know, if it was good action, it had some good twists, but it did feel like a finale to a different season, you know, and it felt like we were building up to stuff that ultimately never really mattered. You know, I was looking forward to seeing how did Din and Bo-Katan adjust to, like, this new image of what a Mandalorian is. How does his perspective change when he gets outside of this cult, as you start to realize that this cult is wrong and manipulating him, and you know, do they start to see things differently? And then they never really explore that at all. They're just kind of like, it's cool that they're all Mandalorians, isn't it cool when they all fight in these costumes, you know? And it never really seems to get deep into anything, even when it tries to, you know. So I liked this episode, but I just feel like as a whole this season kind of felt like a waste of time slightly. Like, it feels like they're giving us good episodes here and there, but by the end I don't really know what they were building towards, because this finale feels like out of place to me for the rest of the season. And I don't know, I'm just not sure what the show wants to be. Is it an episode of the week sci-fi adventure? Is it something that's gonna make me desperately want to cry at the end by pulling at my nostalgia heartstrings? Is it something that makes me want to care about the characters? Because by the end of this third season I feel like I did not learn anything new about the characters or their relationships or how they see themselves. I didn't learn anything new about the lore of Star Wars or like the world of Star Wars or anything like that either. So I feel like it was a nice kind of little adventure here and there, but for a show that releases once every like 2 years and only gives you like a handful of episodes when it does release, I feel like you should do more than just kind of like, here's some cool little adventures and then kind of a finale that resolves some stuff, but not really.
Yeah, to me it was like, just, I think a lot of the problems stem from this season stem from two things of like folding Rangers of the New Republic into this season, as well as not having the availability of Pedro Pascal that they would have liked. So they kind of had to backtrack things, certain things with the helmet. But then there were other choices they made that just like honestly didn't make much sense to me, like the destroying of the Darksaber in the finale. It's like, I get kind of what they were going for of like, okay, she doesn't need the Darksaber to lead, but I feel like the Darksaber is such like this big mythic thing that if you're going to destroy it, you kind of have to build up to it more. Like if, you know, Din had the Darksaber and he did the whole thing where he gave it to Bo-Katan, like I get it, but there should have been like a bunch of Mandalorians like challenging Bo-Katan for the Darksaber, to the point that it was just almost a distraction and be like, how is anyone supposed to lead if we all just think, oh, whoever holds this sword, that's who's going to lead us all, when it should just be, hey, maybe whoever the best leader is, that's who should lead us all. So if it's like so many people challenge Bo-Katan or something, and it's just like, you understand it, you're like, okay, it doesn't matter who holds the Darksaber, because at the end of the day, Bo-Katan's the leader. Like, it makes sense, but it's like, I didn't really see the purpose of her destroying it, especially when the whole thing started with Book of Boba Fett last or last year, and now this year, if we're watching Din struggle, you think, oh, it's going to be about him, like, learning to use the Darksaber, and maybe Bo-Katan will have it for a while, but it's still, okay, if we're all, it's just going to end with him giving it to Bo-Katan, and then it getting destroyed, why did we spend so much time with him struggling to use it, if ultimately whoever could use it, like, whoever the best leader of Mandalore is, it didn't really matter if they had it or not. That just felt like a waste of time. And then as far as everything with what everyone thought when the, not the penultimate episode, or maybe it was the penultimate episode, was titled The Spies. Yeah, when the penultimate episode is titled The Spies, and basically everyone is, like, waiting for the armorer to be revealed to be the spy because she's, her actions, basically because her actions didn't make sense. I feel like ultimately this episode, or the final episode, should have had the armor remove her helmet on purpose to essentially, like, I think, like, I get maybe they didn't have the availability of Pedro Pascal they would have liked, but they, especially with the volume, maybe even in promotion of season three, they could have pulled Pedro Pascal, okay, we're going to do this thing, Moff Gideon's going to take off your helmet, and then at the end, when we've relit the forge, we do all that, you're going to go into the waters to basically re-baptize yourself so you can put the helmet on, but instead the armor would stop him and just take her helmet off and say, like, essentially there's more than one way, and it would show, like, okay, the armor has had a change of heart. But if it's like, what's the point in you keeping your helmet on if you're surrounded by all these other Mandalorians who are, like, part of now the same part of group as you, and they just take their helmet off whenever they want? I'd be sitting here going, like, wait, why is my helmet on right now? Doesn't really make sense. I don't know.
I think this show is kind of like
there was just, like, two or three small moments here and there that they could have added to make every, to make the moments that they had hit, but the moments that they had didn't exactly hit. And, like, the finale, and, like, the, I forgot, of, like, having Grogu adopt the Kree, and she's like, well, he can't because, like, his parents don't sign off on him. You know, you don't know where his parents are. And he's like, well, what if I adopt him? And, like, him adopting Grogu was supposed to, I guess, be this big thing. But it's like, I felt like we as an audience accepted Din as his father. Like, if throughout this whole show, people kept saying, like, referring to Din as Grogu's father, or referring to Grogu as Din's son, and he kept rejecting that idea and essentially saying, no, I'm just, like, watching over him as I take him to where he needs to be, or I'm just training him to be a Mandalorian. And then in the, you know, season three finale, he's like, no, I'll adopt him. It would have hit. But it's like, we all accept Din as Grogu's father. So when he's like, I adopt him, and it felt like it was supposed to be this big moment, but everyone at home was probably sitting there going, like, I mean, yeah, we knew this.
Yeah, I mean, it was a nice moment for them, I guess, because you definitely do see that it's a change from when they first met, you know. But yeah, I just feel like there's not a lot of weight left in this relationship, because I still feel the cheat of bringing Grogu back brings a lot of the heat out of this relationship, because we had such a teary-eyed moment at the end of season two, and now it feels like they're just back to the same place again. And yeah, I feel like the show is in part an identity crisis. You mentioned how that is kind of merging with this other show, Range of the New Republic, and I feel like that is a mistake. You got to let the show be its own show, you know, and find a new way to make Rangers of the New Republic work instead of trying to constantly shoehorn other shows into other shows. You know, it reminds me of when you're halfway through Book of Boba Fett, and then the show is finally kind of finding its footing, and then out of nowhere, here is an entire episode of The Mandalorian in the middle of the Book of Boba Fett, and you, all of a sudden the show is shifting around to this whole different thing just to try and launch a different show, and then ultimately Book of Boba Fett ends up being this dud that no one really talks about because it never had a chance to really properly be itself. And I feel like I'm feeling that same thing here, where this season's going to be one that no one really talks about or remembers, because sure, maybe the next season is some cool stuff, or maybe this Rangers of the New Republic show isn't going to end up being some cool stuff, but this one just feels like something that was here to move some pieces around and to launch some other shows. And by the end, I'm just kind of disappointed, because I was so into the first half of the season when it was just kind of being this fun adventure show that was kind of building up to something. And then all of a sudden, it in the last couple episodes, it stepped right back to being, we're going to be a launch pad to two, three other shows that are going to come up soon.
Yeah. How do you have felt if they had announced that basically, like, hey, we don't have, you know, Pedro Pascal's very busy. We don't have the availability that we'd like. So this isn't season three, and they announced, like, that basically this is going to be the Song of Bo-Katan. And essentially you get the same story, but Bo-Katan is clearly the main focus. Din and Grogu aren't in it as much, but there's definitely, like, them in the background. And there's moments that focus on them, just like there was moments in this that focus on Bo-Katan, but kind of your leads flip, where this was definitely, like, Din and Grogu were the leads, and Bo was pretty much there most of the time. But if it was instead, Bo-Katan was there most of the time, and you're just following her, like, joining this group of Mandalorians and learning to be its leader of this group of people as she goes from... It's essentially like a Dances with Wolves, Avatar... Fern Gully, whatever you want to call it, type story where this outsider comes into the group and essentially becomes its leader.
Yeah, I feel like in the end, if you don't have Pedro Pascal and you want to make a Bo-Katan show, just give me a Bo-Katan show. You don't got to keep backdooring your way into making it a halfway Mando show where Mando's got to walk around in the background waving at the camera saying, I'm still here. You know, just if you don't have Pedro Pascal, just wait. You know, Mando doesn't have to keep coming out constantly. You have all these other characters to do shows about, you know. Just give me a Bo-Katan show if you want to make a Bo-Katan show, and then save Mando season, Mando for when you actually have like a story to tell with the character and the actor to be there for it, you know, because I felt like they didn't really have much to do. And a lot of this season felt like they were just stepping backwards in a lot of ways, to be honest. They were saying, okay, we made too much progress in season two. Now we got to step back. We got to go back to the cult stuff. We got to bring Grogu back to Din and have him back to being, oh, is he really his father again? Like you said, we're in season three, and they're doing, oh, maybe I can adopt him. I feel like that was, like, the season one arc, you know, where we're past that point now. But, yeah, we keep going back to the same beats because it feels like a lot of this was just, okay, season two moved you quick. Let's go back because we want to drag this story out a little longer than we thought.
Yeah. All right. Anything else before we move on to our final thing of the episode?
I'm curious how long it is until next season. I don't even know if we have... in any kind of release window or anything like that for the next season, but
heavy rumor on the street is season four is going to start filming in October, which I think would put us at if October of 2023. I think our best bet is a release like back to that November 2024.
I'm looking forward to it because, yeah, even though I thought this season ended up flopping a bit by the end, there were some great episodes throughout. You know, I don't want to sound like the season was a huge failure because I thought overall I liked the season, and some of the episodes towards the beginning I'm going to always remember as some of the best episodes of Mando, you know. But it's just disappointing when they give you a finale that feels like it's trying to feel epic that is just not epic enough to warrant that.
Yeah. All right, you ready to figure out who our MVP for I guess the last 2 weeks will be?
Yeah, who do we got, Joe? I'd like to hear your ideas here.
Oh, I wish I had some. I am scrolling through our topic. Oh, you know what we completely did not talk about? The teaser for Black Mirror season 6.
Oh, I never wrote it down
in our topic, and we kind of brushed on that it was going to, and we were going to talk about it later, but then we never actually got to it.
Black Mirror is such a blast. Even the worst episodes are, you know, goofy or like grimdark enough to have a good time with. You know, I've never watched a Black Mirror episode that I felt like was a complete and total waste of my time. And now it feels like it's been forever since we had Black Mirror, and the world has changed so much. Technology has advanced so rapidly, and our relationship with it has changed so quickly. I can't wait to see what perspective they have now, because the creator has said before that he felt like there was nothing left in the show because the world has essentially like become a Black Mirror episode in itself, and there was nothing left to comment on because our world was surreal enough to be the commentary, you know. Like, and I kind of agree in some ways that it feels like our world is so crazy in our relationship with tech that it's going to be hard to find something you can even say about it that hasn't been said already. And I'm curious what we can do with this show, because I'm really excited to see its tonal whiplash. This trailer definitely leaned into the horror side more than the sci-fi side, so I'm wondering if this season is going to be much more about the horror and the sci-fi, and the sci-fi is going to be there to kind of like give this thematic and tonal and visual edge to this, to the horror. And I think that that might be a direction you go if you feel like the sci-fi has run dry in a world that is a sci-fi in itself.
All right, I want to pitch you an idea, and I want your thoughts. So, I mean, this is an interaction you and I had on Twitter. People can go and look for it if they want to. But the Russo brothers said, like, oh, we're like 5 years away from an AI-generated movie. How would you feel if, for Black Mirror, say, season 10, the first episode was just like we had an AI bot watch all of the previous episodes of Black Mirror and just create its own episode of Black Mirror? I think only because it's Black Mirror and it's kind of it would be self-referential in that way to just have an AI-created episode of Black Mirror.
I think that would be really terrifying, you know, especially how it turns out by the end. It could be one of those ones where it starts out like a normal episode and you're kind of like, oh, it's interesting. Look at these goofy AI switches and turns. And then it kind of like becomes this darker thing where the AI, you know, they write it this way. So the AI becomes self-aware in its own way and starts kind of like writing its way out of a TV show or something like that. You know, I could see it going really meta where it's kind of like trying to write stuff out of the Netflix app or something like that. It's going around and changing the show you're watching or something, you know?
Yeah, that could be really cool. But yeah, I definitely wouldn't be surprised, especially with the whole boom of AI since the last episode. I mean, there's been AI stuff they've talked about, but there was the episode with Donald Gleason where it was basically this AI person, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's more the basis for the storylines in this season for like maybe potentially stuff about AI generated art and like ChatGPT and a lot of these other things where now what was sci-fi even 2 or 3 years ago is now almost part of our daily lives.
And I think part of it could be something that I find fascinating about AI is as it becomes more and more hard to distinguish AI images from real images, there could be an easy Black Mirror premise in there of not knowing reality from fiction and seeing images of yourself doing things you don't remember doing and you say, oh, did I really do that? Or is that some kind of computer-generated image? Or am I losing my mind? Or is it some doppelganger of me going out there doing stuff? You know, I could see that being a great premise for Black Mirror.
Yep. All right. So with that being said, scrolling through reminded me my nomination for MVP of the week is...
You go ahead, because I had a nomination too, so you go first.
My nomination is Charlie Brooker for giving us more Black Mirror.
Interesting. I like that nomination. My nomination is Ronald Gladen, the main character of Jury Duty, the subject and real man of Jury Duty, who carried us through the whole legal process. Okay. And the show doesn't work if that guy's not as like cool and nice and interactive as he is. So
when you watch the finale, it'll even be more locked in. I completely didn't even think of that. Yeah, I'm not gonna defend my pick. When Black Mirror comes out, I'll give it to Charlie Brooker a million times over. But I am down with giving it to Ronald, the star of Jury Duty. Also, fun fact, I was watching it, and then at the end, they were kind of giving everyone's real names. And the judge's real name on the show is Alan Barinholtz. And I'm like, Barinholtz isn't exactly a common name, so I looked it up. The judge on Jury Duty is Ike Barinholtz's dad. So.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, fun fact. So our MVP for the week of April 26, 2023 is Ronald from Jury Duty. So he's a great guy, deserves all the love coming to him, and he gets a little more than love. I'll leave it at that.
Runner up to James Marsden, though.
James Marsden was great. Honestly, I think if we did an episode last week, James Marsden probably would have been our MVP last week. Can we retroactively say that James Marsden was our MVP last week?
And we can give him a double handy, you know, do a little a James/Ronald MVP win.
Well, we didn't do an episode last week. I think we can say James Marsden last week, Ronald this week.
That's true. Retroactively give him the MVP. I'm on that side.
All right, cool. So the MVP for the week of April 19th, 2023 was... Whoops, that was the thumbnail, not the MVP. James Marsden for Jury Duty. So congrats to James Marsden. Jury Duty winning Freevee. Freevee at this point has probably won more MVPs than Amazon Prime.
Yeah, they're at least close, you know?
All right, so I think that wraps up our show for this week. We will hopefully be back next week, barring any trees falling on apartments or houses. Without further ado, goodbye.
Goodbye.